There was an article in the San Francisco Chronicle from Jackson, Mississippi. It's called Mississippi's Freedom Summer Plus 15 by Jerry DeMuth, and it tells about the reunion of people that were part of the Freedom Mississippi Freedom Summer of 1964. This article tells about the reunion at a Holiday Inn and the various SNCC workers and so forth, and the organization of the blacks that had been campaigning in Mississippi since the time of the early registration of the white people coming down to help them register. And the article goes on to say, despite all these changes, there is an awareness bitterly that the poor blacks at the movement still suffer from high rates of unemployment. They have malnutrition, disease, inadequate housing and clothing, inferior education, and so forth. And then the article goes on to say, Alan Lowenstein, who helped plan Freedom Summer, but whose establishment ties, including a special ambassadorship position to the United Nations, have since made some suspicious of his involvement, called those hot points a turning point in the country. And it goes on to say that while he was at the meeting, a man named Bob Moses, who was the main force behind the Freedom Summer, who is dedicated to the freedom movement and helping the blacks, was very conspicuously absent. He was invited to attend but declined. That he was the real power behind the movement, just as you would say Lillian Castellano, Ted Chirac, were the real powers behind opening up the murder of Robert Kennedy. And Lowenstein came in later. This goes on, this article last November suspected Lowenstein and the people there of the places where he was working and his ties, as I say, to the establishment. So the San Francisco Chronicle was calling attention to that this last November. And along those lines was this gentleman, Mr. Dennis Sweeney, the potential assassin who could come along and wipe out Alan Lowenstein if he and Ted Kennedy were to get together and open up the assassinations, or if he was organizing Ted Kennedy's campaign in the following fall. They could pull out of the bag a Mr. Dennis Sweeney, who also had the same complaints about Alan Lowenstein being too close to the establishment and betraying the movement. I believe that Dennis Sweeney was under mind control and psychosurgery with electrode implants that he complained of. I think they were valid, but the complaints that he had were already planted. The seeds were already in the newspapers. The people suspected Lowenstein. And if Lowenstein and Ted Kennedy at any point wanted to bring out the information that he had on past investigations, they could use it. And I think he had to be murdered for what he knew. Not for what he said while he was alive, but what he knew and could say if the appropriate time came and they wanted to say it. Bob Treber asked me the question on KGO Radio, why bother to kill somebody like Alan Lowenstein when Ted Kennedy isn't going to win the election from Jimmy Carter? Why kill his aide or his advance man or the man who works with him, right-hand man, an investigator, and so forth? It would be too obvious to kill Ted Kennedy, and it's true that Ted Kennedy isn't going to win the election, but it also silences him because it's a reminder one more time of one more call to the death of somebody. He's had his brothers Robert and John and Mary Jo Kopechne dead in his car, and then one of his aides in campaign advises his right-hand man, advanced man in various cities with the primaries, killed, and it's one more reminder to Ted Kennedy that these deaths are ever present and all around him, and that I'm sure it's a very tight message, keep your mouth shut. David Harris remembered Dennis Sweeney. He was a Stanford at Student University. Some newspapers had an article, Alan Lowenstein shot by a carpenter in his work clothes. They didn't say that he went to Stanford University. David Harris went to prison. He didn't want to fight in the Vietnam War. He was against the war. And Dennis Sweeney had a deferment. He was able to get out of the draft because his father had been killed in an earlier war in an airplane crash. And so he decided to take the deferment. And then, according to David Harris, he went out of his mind and went crazy shortly after that. Of course, this assassin walked into the office at Rockefeller Center. He just fired off seven shots. I think five went into Alan Lowenstein. He left sat in the front desk, put his gun into the basket of the secretary, and waited for the police to come. He was described as incoherent but rambling. He was a loner. Of course, these stories come out of the headlines right away. Who thinks somebody is after him? That's the landlady saying on WNLC New London Radio. Sat in a chair and waited for the police. He didn't tremble. He was calm under questioning. Sweeney was described as having a very fine mind. He had no signs of volatility during his years at Stanford. No great temper tantrums, rather even tempered. He went to Mississippi, idealistic, to help the blacks, to vote. He was active in the anti-war movement. And then for 4 years in the 60s, he was married to a woman named Mary King. In the 60s, up till 1967, things were pretty peaceful in California. Then Mary King's future husband, Peter Byrne, if many of you know that name, came to California from Vietnam. He had been in Georgia. He came from London and Georgia. Vietnam, he was trained in mind control, later to work with Richard Nixon and the White House plumbers, Hunt and Liddy, with their little escapades, and then went on to manage Jimmy Carter's campaign. Mary and Peter Byrne were active in making Jimmy Carter president of the United States. And it's very interesting that Mary's first husband was put into a mental institution from which he never recovered when her husband was so expertise at mind control. And the very person running against Jimmy Carter in this election in 1980 was Mary King's first husband, a perfect candidate for mind control job, and that's just what happened to him. He was committed to a hospital. He was supposed to be sent up to Oregon, where that hospital where they made One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. But according to the news reports, friends took up a collection and sent him to a mental hospital. Now, nobody has mentioned in the news media what mental hospital he went to. Was it Chestnut Lodge in Maryland, the CIA hospital where they did mind control jobs on various people? I have a book written by Judith Beck Stein from Chicago. She was a graduate of Vassar University and was doing journalism. And she was studying the assassination of John Kennedy and was active in civil rights, and her parents were very prosperous. I believe it was Standard Oil in Chicago. And she wrote a book about how she got drowsy, and they shipped her off. She had a drink, and there was evidently something in there that put her to sleep. And the family shipped her off to Chestnut Lodge, and she wrote a book about her hospitalization, and she calls it the psychiatric hospital prison system of America, how she was a victim of this. And in her book, she talks about fighting fascism and being concerned about Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy and Hale Boggs and George Wallace and Kent State and Jackson State murders and so forth, and that key people who were interested in these things with good minds and good education could be drugged and put into mental hospitals and locked up to lose all their political activism and literally to become total eunuchs in the political American political system. She dropped out of her school training or Vassar or her family beliefs, and they sent her to this hospital to change her head inside out so that she'd stop worrying about these various assassinations and situations. So it seems that this Dennis Sweeney had the same kind of a treatment when he left Mary King. They're married 4 years. Then he was put into a private hospital, and the story is that he left the hospital and went to France and came home. And the best descriptions of this poor man are that he moved around and around a place and never could find himself. And he obviously, according to the people who saw him or knew him the best, was a very blatant example of the government turning an anti-war activist or a pro-civil rights person into a zombie who could do murders, political murders, and wipe out other persons who know too much about the political assassinations. Now, when Dennis Sweeney was arrested, he had a list of six other persons he was going to possibly murder, and one of them, according to a newspaper article, could easily have been Senator Ted Kennedy. We haven't seen the list of who he was supposed to murder. That's a secret. But when Lawrence Kwong shot at KGO, and he was listening to electrodes inside his head that were directing him to KGO radio station. He had a list of people that he was going to murder, and a man on the air talking to Jim Dunbar the day of the killings, he killed Ben Munson. He went around the office and killed a man in the office because there was a bulletproof glass and he couldn't shoot through the studio. That person was talking about the anti-war movement and against Spiro Agnew, and Lawrence Kwong, who had been to Hong Kong and to been Hawaii and mental hospitals and had this strange weapon with a concealed number, also had complained the electrodes and the sounds and hearing KGO. He had a list of people that he was supposed to kill, a possibility. And this Dennis Sweeney said there were six other individuals for whom he had a strong animosity. Charles Hinkle said that this client believed that Alan Lowenstein was working with the CIA and FBI to hear what his thoughts were through a listening device. Now, the fact that he killed Alan Lowenstein doesn't prove that Lowenstein was with the FBI or the FBI, but the boy had, now a man had a natural grudge because when he was active in the movement, he felt Lowenstein was betraying them and not active with the movement. And later, 15 years later, the same activist had the same feeling about Alan Lowenstein. I've shared those feelings, but I also know that you can still be a part of the FBI like William Sullivan, or the CIA like John Roselli or Sam Giancana or William Harvey or Sheffield Edwards or George de Morenschild, and you can be killed for what you know. It doesn't prove whether he's with the FBI or CIA, but it gives a good motive because you can control Dennis Sweeney that Alan Lowenstein is being betraying you. When they were active in the movement and he broke away from Lowenstein and felt he was betraying them, it'd be a perfect person to mind control to come back later and have a list of people he could possibly kill, and the original motive would be possibly be valid. Well, this Dennis Sweeney, of course, according to the news, only lived for 6 months in New London, Connecticut, at the place where he was located when Alan Lowenstein was murdered. He was murdered in New York, the Rockefeller Center, but he came down from New London to do the murder. He only lived there 6 months, and of course I always ask, where was he up till 6 months before? He said he was hearing voices and believed that Alan Lowenstein was controlling them, and it's very possible he was hearing voices and was electronically controlled. A Herman Hamilton lived next door to Sweeney, retired Navy man, and he described him as weird, almost a mummy who never had a friend. The question is, after Dr. Jose Delgado did all this work on mind control and electrode implants for Navy intelligence, who is Herman Hamilton? Usually an unemployed carpenter, ne'er-do-well, crazy mummy is hardly living right next door to a retired Navy man. If so, who's paying the rent for this character, and was Hamilton the control? In most of the cases of these mass murders, there's always somebody, and it's usually a government official, who's right there at the end running the safe house and so forth. According to the stories in the news, Dennis came to blame his political frustrations on Alan Lowenstein. There were political differences and so forth, and that Dennis moved from town to town. It'd be nice to know what towns he went to and where he rented and what stage he was in. As I say, the right questions are never asked. What hospital did he go to if he didn't go to the Oregon Hospital? Some accounts say he did go there. There's a question of electric shock and so forth. What treatment he received when he had this breakdown, and the time where his mind totally changed from political activism, caring about the blacks, caring against the Vietnam War, married to Mary King. She divorces him and then goes on to marry a man who works for Nixon's plumbers, Nixon's White House, and then goes on to manage trilateral Jimmy Carter's campaign. At what point did the transition break that Mary King leaves Dennis Sweeney, who becomes a mental vegetable, and takes on Peter Byrne, an expert in mind control and mind experimentations, to go on to work for the White House and the government drug enforcement agencies? Where was the transition that Mary leaves Dennis Sweeney and becomes Peter's wife, and Dennis Sweeney becomes a mental vegetable for 15 years? Where has he been for 15 years? What hospitals? How did he get out of the country? How did he come back? Where was he living? And how did he end up next door to a Navy man? And that transition from Mary King and Mary marrying Peter coming home from Vietnam is interesting, because when he was in the Haight-Ashbury area and the hippies, the anti-war people, were being poisoned and totally put under a mind-control job, losing their minds and being put in mental hospitals, I was told about the activities of government agents in the Haight-Ashbury area. And that's really what broke up the whole hippie movement, was the government bringing in medications and drugs, driving these people crazy, and then putting them in hospitals where they did electric shock, Thorazine, prolaxin, and electrode implants. So the people, Peter and Mary Byrne, that managed Jimmy Carter's campaign from Georgia to Washington with the on the veneer of the anti-war people and Carter the liberal, giving them the liberal image, actually had come from the Nixon Plumber's White House team. And right now, Mary King, Mary Byrne, is a full-paid cabinet position for Jimmy Carter at this time, and Peter Byrne works for the United Nations, at least the last I heard of him. As I say, the reports say that Dennis's problem started 15 to 17 years ago during the anti-war movement. He viewed Al as the archetypical traitor of all the political principles he believed in. This is the cover story on why he went after Allard Lowenstein. Dennis believed there was a transmission device implanted either under his scalp or in his mouth. This is very easy, and this is what Lawrence Kwong, as I say, complained about. I have many, many files of articles of surgical implants and the use of them to control people and their behavior and make them violent. And Dennis believed that there were implants. In fact, he had filed down his teeth. He didn't want people reading his thoughts. And I have information about dental work and electronic or radio control through the brain or through the teeth. And he had filed his teeth and thought that people were reading his thoughts through his teeth. Dennis Sweeney met Allard Lowenstein. He was a Stanford at university. As I said before, Lowenstein was the dean of men teaching a political science course in those days. And Lowenstein said, in quotes, he had been in the forefront of this political activism of the injustices, and he was a very talented person. And then all of a sudden, an activist, a civil rights advocate, goes totally bananas during the anti-war movement, when people who were fighting these causes were very tight and close together, and the only people who really dropped away were those that were drugged and poisoned. If you don't know the name Peter Byrne, the husband of Mary King Byrne, he's the gentleman working for Jimmy Carter who, with Dow Chemical, coaxed the Mexican government. They gave them $43 million to put paraquat into the marijuana to poison the hippies or the possible anti-war people or protesters in the future. The marijuana coming into Mexico the last couple of years was loaded with a poison that could cause cancer in the next 8 or 10 years, and people who smoked it earlier, just similar to x-rays of feet years ago when children were little and finding incidences of cancer. Now, this deadly chemical paraquat is made by Dow Chemical. It's owned by the Rockefeller Combine, and Peter Byrne, working for Jimmy Carter, was instrumental in heavily paying the Mexican government to spray paraquat that was sold in this country that could poison people in California and Arizona and New Mexico, whoever got it. That's how Peter Byrne feels about those people who drop out from society, who are taking the grass, that they are susceptible to future cancers, and we won't know what the toll of that is for many years to come, the effect of having paraquat just a few years ago. Peter Byrne was kicked out of the White House not too long ago because he was prescribing Quaaludes for somebody in the White House, a woman under an assumed name, and Jimmy Carter had to let him out of his administration, although he employs his wife full-time. But in 1978, July 21st, 1978, there was an article, an advisor who quits under fire. This is the New York Times, and it describes from Georgia, Dr. Peter Jeffrey Byrne, working for Jimmy Carter, who wrote a prescription under a fictitious name. He worked, Dr. Byrne accompanied Mr. Carter to the 1972 Democratic National Convention in Miami Beach, where they failed to persuade Senator George McGovern of South Dakota to choose Mr. Carter as his running mate. They went down there in those days to get, instead of Eagleton and the terrible disaster that McGovern went through in 1972, at that time, Peter Byrne introduced Jimmy Carter to McGovern to try to get him as a running mate, and that didn't work. And they went back to Atlanta, where along with his wife, Mary King, they moved from Atlanta to Washington to become assistant director of the White House Office for Drug Abuse Prevention in Richard Nixon's administration. If they couldn't get Jimmy Carter as vice president under McGovern, then he went on to work for Richard Nixon, and he had a presence in the Republican milieu. And in spite of that, he went on to sell, this is the New York Times, to go out and sell Jimmy Carter. He was co-founder of the Vietnam Veterans Against the War, and his wife carried liberal credentials as an activist in the Southern Civil Rights Movement in the early 60s, and she worked for the Federal Anti-Poverty Program in the early 70s. And Dr. Byrne and his wife arranged for the Carters to go to Washington parties to meet the so-called left, the civil rights people, the anti-war people, at a time where if Carter couldn't run with McGovern, then Byrne would work for Richard Nixon and the Drug Enforcement Agency. That was G. Gordon Liddy and E. Howard Hunt and Operation Intercept that he was working with, until Nixon was Watergated out, and then Jimmy Carter went on to become President of the United States. He was, according to the New York Times, a native of Oxford, England. Born there, he came to the United States and studied at Emory University in Atlanta, got his medical degree in 1962, that's 1 year before Kennedy's assassination, was chief of neuropsychiatric section of the Army Medical Research Team in Vietnam in 1965, was a consultant of the Southeast Asia Health Branch of the Agency for International Development, AID, in 1966-67. Then he went to Haight-Ashbury to take care of the hippies, and you know the disaster that that brought on, and that's where Dennis Sweeney got his dose of drugs at that time. And Dennis Sweeney was married to Mary King, who later went on to marry Dr. Peter Byrne, graduate from Atlanta, Emory University, advisor to Richard Nixon and Jimmy Carter, and then he returned to Georgia to work for the Mental Health Unit in Atlanta, Georgia, in 1969, and was named director of the Georgia Office of Drug Abuse by Governor Jimmy Carter in 1971. An interesting career of Peter Byrne and Richard Nixon and the Hunt-Liddy mind control team, the use of Peter Byrne in Southeast Asia with the Army Medical Research Team in mind control, on with the AID, then to Haight-Ashbury, then in Georgia, worked with Jimmy Carter to try to get him to be vice president of the Democrats, then back to Washington to work for Nixon and his drug enforcement and his mind teams, then back to Georgia with the drug abuse, and then to run Mary King Byrne and Peter Byrne, went then to Washington to do the advance work to give that liberal image for Jimmy Carter. But the first husband of Mary King, of all of this, was lost in the civil rights, in the anti-war, at the Stanford University, and was zonked out of his head and ended up shooting Al Lowenstein at a time when he's managing the Democratic campaign against Jimmy Carter in 1980. Very important, if I repeat this over and over, the connections of the man who shot Al Lowenstein, no matter what he was, whether he was FBI, CIA, or not at all, with the information he had on the past political assassinations at a time when Ted Kennedy could open it up. If he didn't win the election, he was wiped out by a man, the former husband of this Mary King, who was turned into this vegetable. Another mind-controlled zombie with electrodes in his head. In January of 1979, I believe, of this last year, I talked about a suit over brain surgery that had to do with a well-known scientist and inventor, this Leonard Kiley, K-I-L-L-E, who had electrode implants put into his head. They wrote a book and a movie called The Terminal Man. It was written by Michael Crichton, a Harvard doctor, and it tells about surgery done by Dr. Vernon Mark, chief of neurosurgery at Boston Hospital, Dr. Frank Irvin, who went on to be professor of psychiatry at UCLA, and how they put electrodes into this head. This woman was married to Leonard Keeley, the inventor, and she admitted him to a hospital and told him it was for his own good, and then left him and married another person, and he underwent surgery. And for 12 years, he complained about the electrodes in his head, the implants in his head, and he became violent from just hearing these sounds and directions. And when he came out to Veterans Hospital, he was in Oregon also, the same hospital that this Dennis Sweeney was at for a while, and he was at UCLA at Veterans Hospital, and the doctors in Boston at UCLA didn't tell the doctors out in California at Veterans Hospital he actually had electrodes in his head. And he had to put a wastebasket over his head. There was a lawsuit suing the Boston Hospital for the electronics that were put into his brains, the microwaves that were coming after him, and he would talk about those. And he had a wastebasket over his head, even when he was in court, to keep the radiation off of the court waves. And there was an article in the Los Angeles Examiner saying the scientists watching the court proceedings said that low-level microwaves are generated by the electrodes that were burning in his brain. I never did get a follow-up on this story, and I only found it at one time in the Los Angeles Examiner. But I had followed that case for many, many years because these doctors are very prominent with Dr. Delgado, and they do implant these electrodes, and they put in what they call a stimosiever. It's a device developed by Dr. Delgado at Yale School, and it lets the brain be recorded and stimulated, and you can be up to 100 feet away without any connecting wires, and you can have a remote control like television set, and you can direct people to go and do certain operations. You can talk to them and direct them, and these have been implanted for many, many years. Animals have been stopped. Delgado illustrated nursing apes with babies at their breasts, and they electronically would tell them to break away from their mother, and he could stop bulls in the bull ring in Spain. He demonstrated electronically with no wires attached. And it's these kind of electrodes that are inserted, and they're not just inserted on just ordinary poor people, victims in mental hospitals. They take highly intelligent, trained people, such as this socially minded Stanford student or an inventor of the Polaroid camera and so forth. They take patents away from people, and these electrodes have been implanted in many, many people. And this particular person, this Dennis Sweeney, complained about electrodes and had a list of people to be killed. And there's every reason to believe that he could be electronically controlled. Now, he'll be in jail. He's there now. He's in prison. He can be charged with the murder. Unless they go to the back of his head or trace the prison records of where he was, it's hard to see these electrodes. It's about the size of a little grain of wheat. It isn't a big thing. And there isn't a big incision, and it's hard to find where the electrode is implanted after it once is implanted. Alan Lowenstein is dead. Dennis Sweeney, a perfectly good mind of an altruistic person, is wiped out. The killings continue every 4 years during elections, and the truth of these stories will never come out unless people of the ilk of Lowenstein talk what they keep in their heads forever, and what dies with them is too late. People like Ted Kennedy should tell the world what they know and not keep these secrets or play these games for higher stakes of electoral offices or appointments. These tragedies are terrible, and they will continue until some people of good faith have the courage to really speak out and share with the world all the information they have.